contract with these refiners, because there's so many middlemen, if you will, between them and the ultimate consumer at the gas pump.
If I may follow up, the maximum benefits to the citizens, then there's no way that we can assure that that will happen. It's the benefits, the employment, and that it might create in the tax base. In my particular, along that same line, in my particular district, we have a shopping center area who has a tax base of over $100 million, employs over 1,000 Alaskans permanently, and we're not subsidizing them in any way. They're operating on the free market and playing all by the same rules. But anyway, I have a, if you'd like to respond to that, or I have a really a question.
Oh, I was just going to say that policy that you refer to, you know, is embodied in statute. It was the wisdom, at least of a prior legislature, that should be a preference.
Delivery under the Tesoro A&S contract is continued on Tesoro's expansion of its refinery. But, and Tesoro has until, I think, June 30th, 1987, to complete that expansion. So basically, the state has to reserve sufficient quality to satisfy that contract in the next 3.5 years if these contracts are approved. Yet I'm unable to see any place written in the contracts where there's any pledge or expressed promise or obligation of to actually undertake or complete the refinery expansion. So what I'm saying, if we had an opportunity tomorrow for a 10-year contract or for a longer time for, say, a dollar or more, a barrel more, we couldn't honor that contract because of we've committed if these are approved. And I was wondering, if I'm correct in thinking, would Tesoro incur any financial penalty or in the event it fails to undertake or complete the refinery expansion?
May I ask Bob Maynard to respond to that, or,
sure.
or Donna,
sure.
on the specific
sure.
terms
yeah.
of the contract?
And if I might, any progress goals or who would oversee the project to determine if it's proceeding in a timely manner or...
But if I may, Mr. Cowdery, in also in response, that's assuming that all of the state's royalty oil would be committed under these contracts, which of course is not the case. There will be additional royalty oil that we can dispose of in this manner or another manner.
In 1990, there will be very little royalty oil left to beyond the. But anyway.
Which is another reason the contracts are based on percentages.
Representative Cowdery, you're correct to some degree. There are provisions in the contract that say if they're unable to complete the expansion by a certain date, and I believe it's 1985 or 86. Last year, may have been put up a year, this contract, that the contract terminates. There are also provisions that if they nominate to take the oil, and they don't complete the refinery on time. First of all, they have to get the commissioner of concurrence that the refinery will be complete. And then they can give 9 months notice. If they don't take the oil, there is a penalty of $2 per day per barrel for the taking the oil and not having the refinery completed. In addition, there are other provisions that if they don't, the refinery completion is not up to 71,000 barrels a day. They have to give us back the difference between what they completed the expansion for and the 71,000 barrels per day. So there are some provisions that touch upon the subject. However, between now and 2 years from now, until it starts going, if they don't nominate any oil, we would be precluded from giving another longer-term contract for 10 years that would go into the period of time that Tesoro might complete their expansion. We are able, however, between now and the time they nominate the oil, because they have to give us 9 months' notice, we can dispose of that oil on short terms.
I understand.
During that period of time. So it's not complete, but for another long-term 12-year contract for a period of time until 1985, yes, we are precluded.
And there's no penalty for that?
No.
If I may follow up, is the how was Tesoro operating at capacity prior to 1983? Before they was receiving, they were only receiving some 8,000 barrels per day prior to that. Yet they were running a throughput of nearly 42,000 barrels. Without, couldn't they expand? It seems to me that Chevron converted to North Slope crude, and it seems to me that the without a contract. It seems to me that they have a present 46,000 barrel per day contract of North Slope crude, which they're not capable of refining the sour crude. It would seem to me that I can't understand why Tesoro couldn't expand under the same scenario with the 46,000 barrels per day that they presently have without the additional 26,000.
I'm sure that the Tesoro people are here, Representative Cowdery, and they might be best able to answer.
Yeah, they will be here testifying. Representative Ewing.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A question for Kay. How long after these contracts are approved would it take the state to then sell what royalty oil it had left and then put it into a competitive bid form?
It would take a minimum of about 65 to 75 days. We'd probably have a little bit longer time than that, a couple months, 3 months, 4 months.
Are we looking at, Mr. Chairman, are we looking at just disposing of all the rest of the royalty oil that we have, and how much is it that we're talking about after these contracts are approved?
It's about 100,000 barrels this calendar year. We're not looking at disposing all of that. We think that it will make sense always to keep some amount in value, so we will continue to receive pricing reports. We're looking at a disposal of about 50,000.
And you're looking at going to a competitive bid situation then?
Yes, that's our intention.
Very good.
Representative Lindauer.
Hey, Mr. Speaker, I'm sorry about that. Chairman, Mr. Chairman, I have a number of financially related questions, if I might address them serially. And I'd also like to issue a disclaimer. I own port properties and radio stations in Valdez, which is the oil terminal, and on the Kenai Peninsula. So I do have a vested interest in the prosperity of the Kenai and the oil industry. Having said that, Commissioner, what is the current West Coast price for Alaska North Slope crude?
It varies. It depends upon who you're talking about. ARCO is reporting something around, I think, $24.50 as an internal transfer price, to which we and the IRS and everybody else in the world is disagreeing with. Exxon, according to the, they haven't given us a West Coast price, but according to the royalty reports from Exxon, I think they're reporting an internal transfer price on the West Coast even below that. So HIVE, on the other hand, is up around, I'd say around $26.50, $27, according to something I saw last month in PIW. They don't report to us on a West Coast, Gulf Coast basis. I would expect, giving Shell's $18.75 posting, if you add a quarter and add transportation charges, I think that'd be about Ohio's West Coast price.
What is the current West Coast netback price that the state is receiving?
From overall or on a company by company?
Overall, it's reported, I believe, each week. It's the basis for your contracts.
For the weighted average price, which includes
the West Coast portion of the weighted average.
The West Coast
price.
Portion.
I don't know what it is this month.
$17.50 is a weighted average price for both both.
$17.50 is today's weighted average price.
That's what I understand, yes, sir.
There is a differential between the West Coast price and the Gulf Coast price, is that right?
Traditionally, it's been about, because of the fact that ARCO and Exxon report much lower prices, traditionally it's been about a quarter to 50 cents above the overall weighted average. So HIVE's, on the other hand, individual netback would be much higher than that.
But what is the average received by the state, since you're going to sell this property of ours at a price that's the average for all? I think we should know what that price is on the West Coast that you're getting, and what the price is on the Gulf Coast that you're getting, since the average of that is what you're going to sell this for.
The average overall from both together in October or November, I think now, was $17.50 was the pump station one overall weighted average, approximately $1.25 below what Shell's posted for pump station number one would be.
You are, however, even though you don't know the number, then what you're selling the stuff, you are admitting, I hope, that the West Coast price is higher than the weighted average price.
There is no question that if we went out and sold oil on a commercial deal on the West Coast, we would be able to get $1 to $1.25 higher than the overall weighted average.
You know where the Tesoro and Chevron refineries are. Are they on the West Coast or the Gulf Coast?
They would be considered a West Coast refinery.
So this is oil that you are proposing to sell into the West Coast, into the current West Coast markets, which are now purchasing. Is that correct?
You're selling oil on the West Coast, that is correct.
If it's a dollar and a quarter below, and we're selling Tesoro Charter Oil, 71,000 barrels a day, I'm just a country boy, but that looks to me like $100,000 a day below market, or $700,000 a week, or $35 million a year. Is that pretty good estimate of the subsidy you've got proposed here?
If it was just this year, that's correct. I would point out that over the last few years, there have been a number of months and years where our in-value price was above even the West Coast netback by a substantial amount, and that may be true 2 years from now. But taking today's conditions and assuming that's going to last the next 10 years, you're correct.
For those of us who are just country boys, $35 million a year times length, how long does this contract run?
They both are 10-year contracts. There's a 2-year price reopener with respect to Chevron, an initial 6-year price reopener with respect to Tesoro.
Basically, you're saying it's a $350 million subsidy for 30 jobs, 30 permanent jobs. Are there any jobs being created by the Chevron contracts?
That's an ongoing refinery. They would continue to
no jobs.
Operate.
Is that correct?
There's a capital investment in addition to the tax base on the Kenai Peninsula, a number of other benefits besides just the employment. Mr. Lindau.
Does the contract have in it a specification that there will be any jobs created? Refineries, as you know, are rather capital intensive. So what's to cause any jobs to be created? That's just a number that they have given in their press releases, isn't it?
Those are figures that that they have given us in the negotiations, and as I say, Mr. Jurin is here and can respond very specifically as to what Tesoro's plans are and what the estimates are with respect to employment and capital investment.
Do you know what it costs to build a refinery comparable to that, say, of Tesoro's? Can you give us an estimate of this?
The estimate that's given us of the investment in building the refinery is $90 million.
So if we give them $350 million subsidy, they will have a $90 million refinery? Is that correct?
The refinery as a whole, I think, is after the investment, would be a $500 million refinery.
$500 million. Yes. Effectively, the subsidy pays for the refinery over a 10-year period. And they
the expansion plan.
Did you think that the buyers, Tesoro and Chevron, knew that legislative approval was required prior to contract being finalized on a long-term basis?
I'm sure that they did, Mr. Lindauer, in that Tesoro had gotten a contract through the legislature just in 1982 for the 46,000 barrels a day that you just mentioned.
Could you explain why you mentioned about the need or the implication of grandfathering in the so-called change in regulations, that somehow they were implied in your comments earlier where that somehow they were entitled to be grandfathered in? If they were aware that we had to approve, I would think it's hard to see where we'd have to grandfather them in.
I guess I'm not understanding your question. The contracts themselves, even though there's some constitutional debate about the legislative approval, we have all recognized required legislative approval. With respect to the amendment to the contract, it goes to changes in the contract that materially reduce the benefit to the state of Alaska. That's what we were discussing earlier.
You referred in your testimony to the fact that you feel obligated to give preferences to in-state refining, and you have apparently, or the administration over the last two contracts, this contract and the previous contract, apparently is looking at a total of $35 million a year of preferences. Do you think that, say, $5 million a year would be a reasonable preference? Would that be a, would $5 million a year be a preference? It just wouldn't be as big, would it?
I can only restate to you the statute as it now exists, Mr. Landauer, which does give a preference to in-state use of the royalty oil, and that we must make a finding that those needs have been met before we can export it.
Does it say a big preference, or just a preference, or a little preference? It doesn't say.
No, it does not give any dollar amount.
Did anybody with any business experience look at these contracts before you negotiated?
Well, I think a lot of people have business experience
that
have looked at the contract. Donna Wood Johnson on our staff.
Who?
Donna Wood Johnson, who is our royalty officer.
What do you know what her business experience is?
She's a certified public accountant.
What businesses did she?
She was formerly with Arthur Young.
Mr. Chairman, $350 million isn't bad for 30 jobs. I mean, I'd be happy to provide 30 jobs for a whole lot less than that, maybe $100 million. I'd give them a card.
Thank you. Mr. Speaker.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman. I have a question to Kay Brown. Kay, when you were discussing the proposed amendment initialed by the chair and also by the various and then when the finance chairman indicated what the proposed amendment contained, that the committee is then going to propose or is considering proposing, I think I heard both you and the chairman agree that maybe they were about the same, and they don't seem to be the same. If I understood what the chairman said, because as I understand the amendment, it says that the only thing that the legislature must approve would be material amendments which would appreciably reduce the consideration, so that it did increase the consideration wouldn't have to be approved by the legislature. And I think the way that the chairman was proposing it would be any material alteration, whether it's up or down, and it just doesn't seem to read that way. Maybe I haven't read the proposed changes in the regulations, but maybe the amendment that you're proposing has to be read with the proposed regulations to reach the same point. But in any event, as I read it, the amendment that you're proposing, which is, I understand, supposed to address the question that occurred in the Resource Committee regarding the contracts, would appear only to come into effect should the agreement, perhaps on a reopener, reduce the consideration to the seller over perhaps the original contract. But if it increased it, then the legislature couldn't get involved as to whether or not the increase was enough. Is that right?
Yes, I agree with your analysis. And upon reading this, I do see that it provides for any appreciable change. Our amendment, as well as our regulation proposal, goes to an amendment that reduces the state's consideration. Our thinking being that if the state's consideration is increased, the state would be benefited. Also, that we do need some flexibility to make technical amendments.
Right. So I understand. If the amendment involved an increase in the amount of money that the state received for the sale of its royalty oil, then the legislature would not be involved, according to your amendment.
That's correct.
Right.
But they certainly would be on notice because of the regulations and the provisions for public notice. So it would be a very public process, but it wouldn't require legislative approval if the consideration was increased.
I get his point. One of the things that we discussed during the interim commissioner was that led, I guess, in part to the inclusion of reopeners, was our concern about opportunities that might exist sometime in the future should we be able to dispose of our oil to Pacific Rim countries or other markets that would bring a higher price. So it would seem to me that if, for instance, market conditions indicated we might be able to get an additional $5 a barrel by looking at other alternatives, if the Department of Natural Resources, State of Alaska, Department of Natural Resources decided that $2 was an additional was considered in view of the fact that there was an existing refinery, or for whatever reason, decided $2 a barrel was sufficient. Say, move $5 as an example, then the legislature would be precluded from dealing with that. Is that right?
I certainly see your point, Mr. Speaker.
Any further comments? Representative Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Moynihan, since his contact started, one of my major concerns has been a certain connection. I very much have always trusted Tesoro and Chevron, but it just scared the daylights out of me when we found that Charter Oil had bought in legitimately so. But right now we see them in severe trouble with the Security Exchange Commission. We see them in trouble in other aspects in other states, and we know that we were burned very badly twice, and they still owe us $62 million. I'm wondering if the commission has evaluated this and see if somehow ever, it seems to me we're going to save the lifeline of Charter. We should be glad to let them sink. But since their stock is going way down with a contract like this, it may be new life to them. How can we ensure we're going to get our $62 million back? Is there any hope at all?
Certainly, I've deferred the Department of Law, but we are pursuing that in the courts. But may I say, Representative Martin, that with respect to these contracts, although some financing came from a subsidiary of Charter to Tesoro, I have considered all along that I'm dealing with corporate citizens of the state of Alaska, long-term ones who have been in the state of Alaska for a long time, Tesoro Petroleum. And yet we were very sensitive to past history with respect to Charter Oil, and did our best to provide for a rescission of the contract if Charter Oil should obtain control of Tesoro. In addition, Tesoro themselves, in a contract with the subsidiary that they obtained their financing from, also had an agreement that would protect the state of Alaska. So, Mr. Jurin, I'm sure can respond to that specifically. But I've felt all along that we were dealing with reputable, long-term corporate citizens of the state. Who had already a material investment in the state, and that we were not dealing with any fly-by-night proposition.
Yeah. Before Mr. Maynard answers, though, but you hit the key word. They said a Charter can guarantee the financing. If they are so heavily involved with trouble now with Security Exchange, if they owe us $62 million bucks now, how can you be assured they can finance that soil? It just blows my mind. I'm not on that level, believe me. I'm just glad the governor gave me my pay raise this year. But from a layman's point of view, if these people are in such serious trouble now, it just scares me that we're again taking a major change, a chance on them. Mr. Manor?
Obviously, for the public record, I'm not going to speak as to the overall chances of the case. However, I would point out that the contract we had with the Alaska Oil Company was with a wholly owned subsidiary and not with the charter company itself. The wholly owned subsidiary, the only asset that it has of value, is a $14 million IOU, basically, a receivable from the charter corporation. We have a very, obviously, if we get a judgment against Alaska Oil, we've got to do something called piercing the corporate veil to the charter organization to get more. That's traditionally, that has been difficult. There may be facts that have helped us, but it's going to be a long, drawn-out fight. I'll be glad, Mr. Representative, and other representative, I'll be glad at any time off the public record to brief you as to what's going on, what we intend to do, and how we intend to do it.
Representative Furness.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, to the Commissioner. Commissioner, we've heard a series of questions from Representative Lindau concerning the pricing of the product. As I understand the current statute, your primary responsibility is to, in setting the terms of the contract, is to give first consideration to in-state refinery. And I believe in your drafting of the contract, you somewhat followed the letter of the law to that extent. It appears now, and again, more specifically to those questions posed by Representative Lindau, that there appeared to be somewhat of a change of mind, and that is we should, in addition to giving preference to in-state refinery, we should also look at a way of maximizing the income to the state of Alaska. I would assume that this is going to take a major policy change, and that change should be in statute. Has your department thought along those lines, and are there any recommendations along that line?
We have, Representative Furness, and as I mentioned, members of my staff have been working with Representative Cowdery and members of his staff in the interim, looking toward that day when we, even under existing statute, when we could say we have met in-state refining needs and can maximize return to the state. Certainly that's a very clear message that's been coming from many of the members of the legislature. We would stand ready to work with members of the Oil and Gas Committee, the Resources Committee, the members of this committee on any necessary legislative change. But I would not want to see you condition the approval of these contracts on such legislative change. As I say, I think these were entered into in good faith by the state as well as by Tesoro and Chevron under the existing rules and the existing guidelines. And if it's the wisdom of the legislature to change those guidelines, then they should not tie the two together.
Mr. Chairman, another question to the Commissioner. Under the contracts currently under consideration, there is a statement of a maximum quantity in terms of percentage of state royalty or oil entitlement. If the current production increases above present levels, are the purchasers allowed to take the crude in excess of their current needs and capacity?
Not in excess of current needs, but it would be based on a percentage up to the maximum stated.
Right. There's two provisions. One provision is the maximum quantity will be a certain percentage, so Prudhoe Bay, tied to Prudhoe Bay, not to all our world water. So if Prudhoe Bay went above, Prudhoe Bay went above 1.5 million, which I would note would be in violation of the Oil and Gas Conservation Commission law right now, the orders right now. But if it did go above, then under the quantity term, the maximum quantity would go up.
It is above.
There are other provisions in the contract, however, which require them to process all the oil they take in their refinery. So if that the maximum quantity under the contract may go up, but they can't run it through the refinery, they can't take it under the contract. And so there is a, they still would be limited, but wouldn't be because of that quantity term.
conversely, what would the scenario be should the quantity of available oil decrease beyond the capacity currently allocated with respect to company? How would you handle that?
You mean below?
So at the low peak and looking at their percentage allocation.
Then they would take less.
They would take less. There's no, I would assume there would be no problems there. One last question, Mr. Chairman. With the legislature approval of the two contracts before us, that is the Tesoro and the Sherwin contract, are we giving a competitive advantage to these companies over the other providers in the state, in your opinion?
Well, with respect to the only other in-state refinery in the state, Mr. Furnace, no, because there is already a long-term contract existing with North Pole Refinery at Fairbanks that are much better terms on behalf of the refinery than the terms offered in these contracts.
What about the other sellers of gasoline? I would think Texaco and Union are part of two that are not represented at this time.
Well, I would assume that that might be true, that it would be a competitive advantage. But again, as a matter of policy, as expressed by earlier legislatures, one that that they thought was of benefit to the state for locating that kind of industry within the state.
Thank you, Madam Commissioner. Mr. Chairman.
Yes. Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First, I apologize for being late. I was defending the public arts bill from a bunch of artists. I don't know if this question has been asked, but it's one that was probably the most prominent from people within my district, and I need to know it from the commissioner. You're in full support of these contracts right now as they're written, and I need to know from you if these contracts are passed and approved by this body and become law, and upon your direction, exactly, if any, how much money is going to be reduced from the gas pumps and the fuel pumps for the Alaskan citizens, or will there be any?
I can't answer that, Representative Moore. That's not as specific of the contract. One must assume that when competition is increased, that prices are lowered. But there, as I mentioned earlier, in response to an earlier question, there are a lot of middlemen between these refiners and the ultimate consumer at the gas pump. And short of some kind of price control, there'd be no way through the terms of these contracts to dictate what that price at the pump might be.
So then, if I may, Mr. Chairman, with your permission, right now you're working within the guidelines of the statutes as they are, and for future contracts, to say the least, would you not think that a more clear identification of what in kind actually should be, or in use, should be identified? Because I have not been able to determine whether it's going to lower at 7 cents a gallon at my gas pump or not. I think it may, but I don't really know, and I don't know any way to measure it. And I was hoping you as commissioner, since you're the one waiving the contracts, you'd be able to tell me 6.5, 7 cents a gallon, so the people back home would know what I was doing and why I was doing it. If you can't tell me, I really don't know where to turn.
Well, I wish I could tell you, Representative Ward, but I don't have that kind of crystal ball either.
Okay, thank you.
Yes.
Representative Cadre.
Yes, in Article 15 of the contract, in the section on security stuff, why was the amount of the letter of credit, the Chevron contract, been reduced to $23 million? And I believe last year's contract for the same amount of oil was for $31 million. So why was the reduction?
The price of oil has gone down since then. The letter of credit is for 60 days worth of oil. And so if the price of oil fluctuates, that letter of credit amount will change over a period of time. That's my understanding. There may be another reason, but the letter of credit is based on the current value of oil, not an absolute amount.
It's my understanding at $28 a barrel, at 18,000 barrels per day, based on this scenario, it's 504,000 a day, or it would last a little more than say 42 days, or the 23 million would last 46 days. Yeah. So
that number should be equal to about $17 per barrel, because the pump station number one value is 1750. So it'd be 1750 times 60 should be the times 18,000.
So if there's a default, the most that we can get back is 30 days or 60 or whatever this letter.
Theoretically, that would give us time to take back all the oil that we've delivered and are delivering and get 15 days in addition to do whatever process we had to. Because of our billing cycle. Yeah.
We've been told that the six-year price reopener for the Tesoro contracts because they cannot secure financing without it. If that's true, isn't it, in a sense, the state participating in a finance in the expansion, and it seems to me that's some constitutional problem that we're participating for a competitive financing competitive enterprises. You know, if we're actually participating in that, an illegal.
I think there's a difference between changing the terms of the contract and recognition of the difference in the parties' situation than us actually taking a participating interest. The contract terms between Chevron and Tesoro do recognize differences in the parties' situation, one's expanding, one's not. I think that's appropriate. The problem you're getting into is in case we actually had a contract term saying we will help you build it directly. It's a more of a direct versus indirect. I don't see a constitutional problem with recognizing individual differences.
Are there any, do you have any history of any other refinery being expanded that had a 6-year or 10-year contract for that expansion?
In terms of the state contract? Or any contract?
Any contract.
Until recently, I knew there was no long-term sale of royalty oil. When we started out doing this in 77, 78, there was no guidelines. Now, recently, I have heard of sales of refineries on the West Coast tied to a long-term crude contract. I think Phillips did one when they bought the one of the refineries on the West Coast.
Costco.
But that's a fairly recent development. So no, I don't know of any.
But wasn't the Phillips or the Tosco refinery, wasn't that part of the sale, since Phillips was selling their refinery,
right. That's right.
That they would furnish oil till they got their money back? I mean, that wasn't really an arm's length transaction, is that right?
You're correct. I mean, what I'm saying, I agree with you. When we're out there selling a long-term oil, that's one of the only advantages to royalty oil, is the fact it's the one place in the world where you can get a long-term secure supply over the long term. In the short term, there may be additional considerations. Like right now, our price is lower than the West Coast commercial price. In the past, it's been higher. Sometimes it's been, who knows it's going to be in 2 years. But you're correct. We are. This is the unusual nature of these contracts. They're unique in the world for that basis.
How is it determined that the difference between the 2-year price reopener and the 6-year price reopener was worth 5 cents a barrel? I mean, what's the logic behind that?
Mr. Cowdery, we negotiated with the companies, and quite frankly, Chevron would not pay any additional over the weighted average price than the 30 cents it had originally agreed to. Tesoro, in recognition of the fact that we could agree to a 6-year price reopener to allow them to amortize their investment, agreed to 5 cents a barrel in addition, would not agree to more.
DNR has repeatedly said that it did not consider any other sales of royalty oil until the in-state needs are met. But in that case, does the department intend to establish some kind of consistency with these negotiated contracts, or It would seem to be following up on your answer there, if some way one says we can't pay that extra nickel or that extra dime or that extra dollar, we have the state has negotiated in good faith to meet inside in state needs, but the price they say they can't pay. When does our obligation stop if they say they couldn't pay but $10 a barrel, or if they say they can pay $15 a barrel or 20 or whatever? What figure would you determine that we could no longer we have did our duty to meet in-state need as far as a free market? And
I guess I'd not set any kind of arbitrary figure, because as you know, it would be bound to have to change tomorrow with conditions. I think that we would have to make the finding that it was now appropriate to export state oil, but we could not make the finding that in-state refining needs had been met.
Mm-hmm. So in other words, the financial value of the state of in-state refining versus cash revenues of the sale hasn't been really analyzed. We don't know what figure that...
It's awfully hard sometimes in matters of public policy, and I can't sit in the shoes of that legislature.
Sure.
that passed this criteria, but it's awfully hard to assign dollars and cents sometimes to public decisions of that nature. We do it with respect to a lot of services that we want to provide. We do it because we want to see business locate and expand in Alaska in certain areas, and that's a good public reason.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to assign a dollar value to it.
Were the people who negotiated these contracts for the state the same who negotiated the MAPCO and El Petro contract? Were they involved in them contracts?
I certainly was not involved in either the MAPCO or
I realize MAPCO it was a carryover
contract. These were in response to a general solicitation that had gone out in the prior administration. I think probably members of the Department of Law may have participated.
All the people that were in that's when you can't speak.
I can't speak.
Actually, no, the conditions were different in those negotiations. I mean, it's a different world back then. But the contracts have changed markedly since then. To me, changed perceptions and changed needs. And I don't think anybody who was involved in the Alpetco negotiations on any side is still with the state government or with the company.
Who would be responsible if these contracts are passed for renegotiating a price reopener or determining if the new price is appropriate? And I was wondering if there's any experience following Representative Lindauer's line in marketing of oil. Do we have anybody with that experience in the department that for marketing food?
Okay, we are trying, Mr. Cowdery, to put these responsibilities down in the Division of Oil and Gas in the department. So Donna Wood Johnson would be one of the people who would be negotiating the price reopeners if she was still in that division. We would hope to strengthen the Division of Oil and Gas. At least that's one of my desires as commissioner.
Did, but she has no experience in marketing crude oil. In the crude oil, she's accounting experience. Is that correct?
I think she's not in marketing crude oil. But again, we have to remember that all of our processes have to be public ones, with public notice, and that we cannot be in the same position as a company that is marketing on a daily basis on the telephone. So for that reason, we pay some penalty, I think, in price, but we will always gain additional benefits by being able to assure long-term supplies.
How long will the state's royalty share be able to meet our in-state demand for products produced by these refineries? And what will happen when our demand is greater than our royalty share? In other words, will the refineries have to stand on the free market, or would they, I mean, what's your opinion of that?
Well, I would assume that they would have to look to other suppliers. I don't think the state is the sole supplier. And as a matter of fact, I guess North Pole Refinery does get some of its oil from the producers.
I would point out that one of the reasons the 1995 date was picked was that was one of our best guesses concerning when that crunch period would come, that all the oil would come back to the state, reallocate at that time. That given reasonable projections of new fields coming on, that was where the real crunch was going to come. And that's one of the reasons 95 was the outside.
It was my understanding the 1995 date was because of the industry's needs till that time.
Combination of the two. The industry wanted them originally to the year 2005, even with the NAFCO contract. The question is how long are we willing to go up to accommodate those needs?
Well, in that case, do you think the state's creating an industry that's dependent on a state subsidy for 10 or 20 years down the road? And then do you think that's in the state's best interest to create a situation that way when it hasn't?
The street majority approval of these contracts, if I read that poll correctly. Certainly there's the opportunity at the time of the price reopeners to re-examine the whole question.
It's my understanding the Dittman poll was a poll by industry people, subscribers to Oil and Gas magazine. It's my understanding to some 220. I don't think that's the man on the street that we're talking about. But anyway, is there any contractual definition on how the end value price is to be calculated? For instance, if not, couldn't the buyer disagree with the state and involve the state in more costly litigation? I think, Bob, we're probably, what, $15 billion worth of litigation now with the industry?
The contract has a number of provisions relating to how the end value price is to be calculated. Right now, we are in litigation with the producers saying that the end value price should be much higher. And in fact, our argument will be that Exxon and ARCO should be fourth, so Ohio's higher weighted average. The contract is subject to the results of that lawsuit. Until that point, they are tied to one of two sources, either one, royalty reports, or two, if those reports are incomplete, inaccurate, or otherwise unavailable, or whatever. They are tied to severance tax reports, but they can't see those reports. They have to rely upon a certified statement by the commissioner that, yep, this is the price. So there's a number of provisions in there. There's also provision that if they dispute the price, they have to pay what we bill unless it's clearly a matter of a decimal point being out of place. And then they have to go to court instead of the other way around. So we'll get the money up front in that instance. So there's a number of provisions like that relate to the lawsuit, relate to other adjustments. Into that.
But if we get the money, they still could litigate the possibility of litigation.
They could litigate. There is some provisions in there that say they can't go to court under some circumstances, but you couldn't take them out of the courthouse for it.
Apparently, the buyers have accepted that any disputes decided by the or it will be decided by the commissioner, according to Article 23.1 of the contract. I think that's kind of known as a God's Clause or something of that effect. Are we to believe that this clause is actually enforceable? Is there any precedent for the clause? Are we just creating more job security for attorneys? Or
that too. Yes, there is support for that. The federal oil and gas leases, which are similar proprietary sales by the federal government, have a provision in them that states that the Secretary of Interior shall establish the minimum net royalty values under those provisions, and that is to be tested under the reasonable basis test, very similar to ours. That has been litigated a number of times, has always been upheld. There is a solid precedent for that sort of clause. particularly when you're a sovereign.
Representative Cowdery, I'd like to limit the questions on this. Is we're going to conclude the joint session with the oil and gas here, and then we're going to recess for 15 minutes. And finance members are going into my chambers, and we're going to come back here with only finance members and take care of the contracts after that. You got any further questions? I'd like to get down, so I'd like to get into Tesoro and Chevron. Because at 3:30, I'm going to shut this thing down.
Okay, I was just kind of basing on all the. Okay. What's the price that the state buyback for residual oil based on the? Why is the price based on the highest price offered for the same product from any other bona fide buyer, and not based on prices from contracts of central similar length and term and quantity and duration? Is this one?
That's a standard term usually in these aid clauses. I would point out there's a ceiling on that. It states it can't be higher than the weighted average price of crude oil plus transportation to the Kenai, which right now would be probably below what the residual could command the open market. But it's an otherwise standard term in a lot of the open.
It's my understanding that with the sophisticated refineries that are in some of the industry came up, there's been less and less resid produced, and that in some cases today the price of the resid of these contracts is worth more than the higher value than the we're receiving for the whole barrel. Is that true?
That's correct. In which case the ceiling price kick in, which is the price of oil.
In other words, we could buy it back after they had taken out the lights for the same price that we had sold it for. Is that right?
Right. Then resold for a higher price, if you can assume that the price would be the same 9 months down the road, which is the.
I'll conclude my questions.
Thank you, Representative Lindauer.
Mr. Chairman, I'll defer to the representatives from Tesoro and Chevron.
Thank you, Representative Hilbert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to make a comment, and then I want to. Ask a question. We've been sitting here for an hour and a half discussing these complex questions on the contract, and it would just occur to me that how everybody that was polled in that Dittman poll read them contracts and then said they was in favor of it. It just don't make sense. I mean, I don't understand half this stuff that's going on. What my question is I'd like you to tell me what I can go back to sleep new if I vote for these, to ratify these contracts, if I can go back to sleep new and tell them after they've read that there's going to be $35 million less in the coffers, it's going to accrue to them. What's the benefits going to accrue to those people in sleep new?
I don't know specifically what the benefits to the people of Sleep Mute are going to be, but one, you're encouraging an in-state industry to refine products within Alaska, and hopefully that kind of competition will reduce retail prices. I know that with respect to Western Alaska, that the products that come to Western Alaska are not refined within the state because it's cheaper to transport them from refineries in California to Dutch Harbor and then up the coast to the various communities in Western Alaska. But to say that you've fulfilled your obligation under the terms of the statute, which gives a preference to in-state refiners and helps corporate citizens of the state of Alaska, I think you can say that's the benefit to your constituency.
Okay, so it's an intangible benefit. It may or may not.
It may or may not.
Thank you.
I'd like to thank you for your time this afternoon. I would like you to look at the material amendment that I have proposed, look at the language so you can have that ready for me so we both agree, I think, on the content of it. We need to just fix up the language so we both agree on. Would you have that ready for me in half hour, please?
Surely.
Also, isn't it correct that perhaps we also believe that there needs to be some statutory language done on royalty oil contracts?
Yes, I think we do agree, Mr. Chairman, and as we have offered to the Oil and Gas Committee and again offered to you, our department stands ready to work with you to make those necessary changes.
Fine, then I would like to see you in my office at 8:30 in the morning so that we can look at legislation pertaining how we can maximize the state revenue. We can look at legislation from negotiated bidding to competition bidding. We can look at pricing mechanism in the North Slope crude and also other areas in handling of future royalty oil contracts. So I think that the oil and gas of the House and both the House Finance would like to work on legislation so we can have some type of mechanism for the future. And I thank you for your time this afternoon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
Thank you.
We've got half hour left. I'd like to try to see if we can get Chevron and Tesoro, if they would like to. I'd first call on Chevron. If there's anybody from Chevron that would like to testify on this piece of legislation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Would you state your name for the record, please?
My name is John C. Lutmeiler. I'm manager of strategic planning for Chevron USA. Some of my prepared comments would be repetitive of what's been discussed at quite a length here, so I'll try to trim it down as much as I can. We've talked somewhat already today about the fact that Chevron negotiated a contract last year with the administration for 18,000 barrels a day, a long-term contract to be run at our Nikiski refinery. This contract was approved in the Senate last year, but it was not acted upon in the House. As a result of this, we, Chevron, continue to be the only in-state refiner that does not have a long-term contract for royalty oil with the state. We're currently operating under a one-year contract that expires May 30th of this year. Now, the primary concern, as has been mentioned also last year by the House, was the fact that the price was, in a sense, somewhat fixed over the term of the contract. Not totally fixed. It was tied to the end value, but it had a fixed premium over the end value price for the term of the contract, which at that time was 11 years. Now, as we've also heard today, this would preclude the state from taking advantage of some other opportunities that may come up, such as the potential export of North Slope crude to Far Eastern countries at something that may be $5 higher or some number. Now, since the contracts weren't acted upon last session, we have spent a lot of time meeting with members of the legislature, members of the administration, the DNR, trying to come up with a modification to the contract that would make it acceptable to all parties. We believe this has been achieved. We spent many, many hours, days, talking with everyone concerned about this. And it is our firm belief that everyone agreed that the procedure that we all agreed upon was satisfactory. And this was the two-year price reopener. This provides a mechanism whereby the state or Chevron can offer a new price every 2 years if there's belief on either party's part that the existing price does not represent the market price of the crude oil. If agreement isn't reached when this price reopener is activated, then the contract would terminate and the oil would revert to the state or to the producers. Now, we are very concerned about obtaining approval early on in this session of this contract for Chevron. The reason for this is that we do not have a firm crude supply for our refinery in Nikiski beyond May 30th. it will be very disruptive to our operations, I'm sure, that we'll somehow, I'm sure, struggle through, but it will be terribly disruptive. In addition, I'll repeat again, approval of this contract by the legislature would be consistent with contracts the state has already made with the other in-state providers in the past. Without taking too much of your time, I'd like to make a couple of comments about Chevron's long-standing position in this state and commitment to it. We were the first company to market products in this state beginning in 1889. We at the present time are the only statewide marketer of petroleum products. We supply 14 communities that no one else supplies in the state. The total volume of products we provide here amounts to some 27,000 barrels a day, or about 35-36% of the state's total needs. In addition, we operate a dedicated tanker up here known as the Alaska Standard to serve remote locations. We have some very expensive and extensive barging arrangements with other companies, they're not our barges, to deliver product to places that are difficult to get to. We put an awful lot of effort into moving products around the state to get it to the users who need it. In addition, we did build the first refinery in the state, the first modern refinery. It started up in 1963. We don't make the whole range of light products, but we make a range of light products and we import the rest of them, with the exception of motor gasoline, which we obtained from Tesoro. We historically have made about 70% of the state's entire asphalt requirement. In 1983, we made 100% of it because the other single supplier backed out of the market. In the area of employment, we directly and indirectly employ about 1,300 people, 1,300 Alaskans, through our own operations and through dealers and jobbers. Now, looking at the royalty oil that the state has control of, currently volume amounts to some 197,000 barrels a day at North Slope, including Kupark. About 81,000 barrels of this is committed to in-state refiners at the present time. The balance, about 110,000 barrels a day, is exported by the producers, a large part of it going to the Gulf Coast for products to be made and sold there. If you look at this, at the transportation of this oil, the state, in effect, is subsidizing the transport of that oil to the Gulf Coast, paying for it, in effect. Now, none of the large producers return products to the state of Alaska. Chevron, on the other hand, besides the products made in the Kiski refinery, imports 12,000 barrels a day of products back into the state from our California refineries. This is, again, a whole range of products we bring back up here, and one of them is very important to the state. It's not a large volume, but it's extremely important, and that's the aviation gasoline consumed in the state. We provide about 80% of that. Now, if we look at this, at the request that Chevron has for 18,000 barrels a day, a way for the state to look at this is they can continue leaving this 18,000 barrels a day with the producers for exporting to the lower 48 to make products largely in the Gulf Coast. Or secondly, the state can sell this oil, this 18,000 barrels a day, to Chevron under a long-term contract at a higher price than the state will receive from the producers. The contract calls for a 30-cent premium over the price that you currently obtain from the producers. The contract provides that we will run this 18,000 barrels a day at the Nikiski refinery. And supply the products made from that refinery in the state. It's hard for me to see how anyone can argue that this use of royalty oil is not in the best interest of the state and its citizens. Now, finally, again, we hope the legislature will determine that it is indeed in the best interest of the state and its citizens to approve a long-term contract with Chevron, a company that has historically done business in Alaska and has sizable investments in the state. We would like to continue our major involvement in serving this state for a long period of time. I'd be happy to try to respond to any questions, Judge.
Representative,
yes, you criticize the export of the oil from them, the other producers. However, Chevron, as my understanding, is a producer also, and last year they produced something like 12,700 barrels a day, which they exported straight out of the state, just like every other, all the rest of our oil. Why doesn't Chevron use their own North Slope crude in their Alaska plant?
Well, let me make two comments about that question. One is, we certainly don't export it to the Gulf Coast, and that lowers the in value price if that's done, and we all know that. Secondly, we run an awful lot of crude oil in California that provides products that's brought back to this state. So you can look at it that that crude oil goes into our entire system of crude oil, and it you could say it makes a contribution to the state, definitely.
And you talked about the 30 or 35, 30 cent premium, am I right? With
that's right.
It's my understanding, or DNR has indicated, that 30 cent premium is to offset the impact of West Coast displacement. That the oil, if we didn't sell it, say, here, we would sell it in California, and there's some impact on severance base and things of that nature. I think that's been brought up.
Well, that has been brought up, and we've countered that in the past. We've had this conversation before, actually, and in fact, in the case of Chevron, we aren't displacing any oil off the West Coast by receiving the royalty oil in Alaska. We displace most likely foreign crude off the West Coast, and actually increase the in value, the average in value price for the state's benefit.
But it was my understanding in our conversations that you had been in the past bought North Slope crude through a contract that is no longer in existence with one of the producers, and that you're now producing Indonesian crude to replace that contract or in the West Coast.
Well, we're doing many things.
At the time of our conversation, you said
we're doing many things to replace that. That oil, we had a large contract with one of the producers at one time. It was mostly on an exchange basis, and it became terribly expensive because of the oil we had to return to them. The oil we run on the West Coast now is highly California oil. We run more of that than we used to. That's been a major replacement. In addition, the crude runs are down on the West Coast. We don't run higher Indonesian crude levels now than we did a few years ago.
Thank you. No more questions.
Thank you. Any further questions? Thank you very much, sir. We'll have to soar at this time. State your name for the record, please.
My name is Dennis Jurin. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for giving me this opportunity and committee members to appear before you here today. Jobs, taxes, security of supply, competition are elements that we think we bring as benefits to the state of Alaska with our crude oil contract proposal. In testifying before the Royalty Oil and Gas Board, I provided direct specific information indicating that prior to our entry and construction of our refinery in 1969, prices for products in Alaska were generally running about 70% over prices for products on the West Coast. Within 1 year of coming on stream, that differential had been cut in half. Within the next 10 years, the differential had ceased to exist at all, as is the case today, and in many cases, product prices in Alaska are lower than prices on the West Coast. I would suggest that is largely attributable to competition. In terms of security supply, there were no lines at service stations in 1973 and 1979 in Alaska. There were in most every other major city across the United States. I would suggest that was attributable to the fact that there was sufficient refining capacity here in Alaska to supply the needs of Alaskans during that period of time. Those conditions no longer exist, and that's why we've got to expand our refinery. The product is currently being imported into the state, both gasoline, turbine fuel, and there are other hidden deficits with creating those types of supplemental imports besides the lack of availability during periods of shortages. You've got a ship sitting down at the dock in Anchorage right now, supposedly leaking turbine fuel after hitting a rock in the Cook Inlet, coming up with an imported cargo just in the last 2 days. Alaskan statutes currently provide that the needs of in-state refiners for crude oil must be satisfied before royalty crude may be sold to other buyers. But let's assume that law did not exist and that there were no laws governing the state's disposition or preference for in-state refiners or in-state marketers. What other options are available to the state of Alaska, and how do these options compare to the contract with Tesoro Alaska? First, the state could sell the royalty crude to the producers, which is what is occurring now, and which is what occurs when the state takes its royalty in value, that is, in money rather than in oil. In this case, the value received by the state is simply the weighted average netback of all the sales by all the producers. Second, the state could offer to sell its royalty crude for a premium over the end value price, either through bid, through negotiation, through the sale against the posted price. Could do it for a short term, they could do it for a long term, and thereby improve the realization over that being achieved by leaving it with the producers. Now, this second option, as I just mentioned, can have many mutations, one of which is Tesoro's proposed contract. For example, there can be a simple cash premium, such as $1 a barrel over the end value price. There could be a commitment to provide some other non-monetary consideration in some form, as I say, other than cash. Or there could be some combination of those sorts of things. A strategy that the state might include could include leaving the crude with the producer or selling it on short-term sales in anticipation of being able to sell it for more money at some time in the near future and thereby achieve greater realization. While certainly it has the potential for increasing the realization to the state, this strategy suggests the ability on the part of the state to predict what the price of oil will be in the future. It also suggests that the prediction is that the price will be up rather than down. That kind of predicting is something that even the experts in the oil industry failed miserably by large proportions at least twice on major occasions in the last 10 years. Now let's look at Tesoro's contract in detail and try to determine how it compares to the other current or potential future opportunities. First, Tesoro pays a cash premium of 35 cents a barrel over the end value price, which over the primary 6-year term of the contract amounts to $20 million. Second, Tesoro will make cash payments directly into the Alaskan economy in the form of salaries and wages for construction and permanent jobs, which equals $45,100,000. Third, Tesoro will make cash payments directly into the Alaskan economy in the form of goods and services purchased from local businessmen, local contractors, and local merchants, amounting to $12 million. Fourth, Tesoro will make cash payments for increased taxes that are estimated to be in the range of $3.6 million. If you were to take that total of approximately $81 million and divide it by the number of barrels received over that same period of time under the contract, you would achieve a total package of cash and direct cash payments into the economy of $1.42 a barrel. In addition, if you applied the typical multiplier effect to only the wages and salaries component of that, and that is generally accepted to be approximately 2.5 times to determine the economic impact, That would raise the contribution or the premium over the end value price to an imputed $2.25 a barrel. Now, I would suggest that not only is the state not subsidizing Tesoro, I would suggest that Tesoro is subsidizing the state, who is willing to take their oil from the producer at a significantly lower price. Frankly, I've never seen nor heard of any offer which might begin to compare with the package offer that we have negotiated with the state. I have totally ignored placing any value on such things as security of supply and the effect of competition, although history has taught us, as I mentioned before, that there is a substantial benefit to be derived from that. I think it's also important to remember that even after satisfying Tesoro's contract, the state has in excess of 80,000 barrels a day of royalty crude uncommitted, which could be used to try alternative strategies. Notwithstanding that both private and public polls taken recently show that the majority of Alaskans, your constituents, feel that royalty crude should be used to create jobs and tax base in Alaska as opposed to selling it outright for the top dollar only. I truly believe that we have struck a deal with the state of Alaska that is fair and reasonable for both the state and Tesoro, and urge you to give your ratification consideration top priority. There are 300 unemployed Alaskans out there ready to go to work in the next 90 days, and it's up to you to decide whether they will or they won't. Thank you.
Questions? Ripson, Cousy? Ripson, Ward.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I asked the commissioner a while back, and I was going to ask Chevron, but they said they buy their gasoline from you. So now I'll ask you. If we approve these contracts, is this going to lower the gasoline at the gas pump, our heating fuel costs for the people that live in my area, are the citizens of the state of Alaska, or is it going to, what is the in-kind trade-off? You answered that there was some statistics before that it was doing this, and I need to have it. I need to have somebody say it.
I can point, as I did, to history and show that as competition has intensified, the price of product has come down. And I think that's not unusual. That happens for any commodity in any market. It is not possible to quantify a relationship there because there are too many variables that can influence the price. Just if the state were to go out and grant a farmer, a dairy farmer, some land so that he might put additional dairy cattle on it and make more milk, he can't tell you that you're doing that. It's going to lower the price of milk 10 cents a gallon. There are too many variables that affect it. The same with refining and selling gasoline, or marketing gasoline. The broad fact that competition, or where there exists competition, prices are lower is a simple economic truth. For someone to suggest to you that they could quantify it and guarantee you that it will go down 6 cents or 5 cents would either be a fool or they'd be lying to you, one or the other.
Okay, thank you. Representative Zaroff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess, first of all, is there such a thing as Yukon time anymore? Is there still?
Yeah, I
was just wondering, that's part of the contract. But the part of the contracts, all three contracts, that caught my attention, first of all, is that Article 16, which refers to preferential hiring and non-discrimination. And I guess my concern is more comment than soliciting any type of a response from you on this here. And I appreciate your comments saying that there's a possibility of 300 people waiting in line just to go to work on this. But it seems to me, in my experience with various types of contractors and job providers, particularly throughout the state, it becomes a challenge to see how many non-residents that could become residents that fulfill these jobs immediately. And my concern lies particularly in rural areas where we have a number of people that have been trained for various jobs that fit into these, that could qualify for various positions, not getting those because they don't appear on certain registers or they don't go through the state employment or this type of thing. And so the possibility of some sort of recruitment to take place or something to this effect. But that's, at this point, the
first portion of these contracts that I've noticed and have raised a red flag in my mind. And I think basically my concern is that the challenge that at least I perceive becomes, you know, a challenge on your part to circumvent the local hire, as I can associate with some projects in my particular district. And I hope that this certainly is not the case.
It has never been the case. We've expanded our refinery in 14 years on five different occasions. And in each of those occasions, we have maximized local hire. It's a matter of policy. If the contract didn't say it, we would do it anyway.
I appreciate that response. Thank you.
Representative Besworth.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Hypothetical question.
Yes.
And you can answer it very quickly and concisely, if you will. Suppose there were no refining capacity in the state of Alaska. All our oil was shipped outside to be refined wherever. Would product prices at the gas pump be higher or lower than they are now?
If you ask me to just speculate with you.
You're in the marketing business. You should be able to answer better than anybody I know.
Any market that's isolated from efficient supply and distribution and transportation capabilities, prices tend to be higher than where there is manufacturing and local distribution and supply. That would be true in other, it is true in other parts of the world, including the lower 48, and I would believe it would be true in Alaska. It was that way before in-state refining existed.
Thank you.
Last question, Representative Lindauer.
A couple of very brief one-answer questions, Chairman. Mr. Jurens, what was Tesoro's net income last year, as reported on its annual statement that everybody got?
About $48 million.
How much?
48.
Was any part of that proposed for this coming year when you file your taxes? Or any part of that going to be merged with or used to offset Charter's losses in any joint filing or filing Charter for distribution of earnings?
I have no idea. Charter, by virtue of their ownership of equities, of the Security Life Insurance Company ownership of equities, has the right to use equity accounting. That is, they may show their return on that investment as part of their income generated from us. Whether they choose to do that or are obligated to do so, I'm not sure. And
so they own enough to merge it. How many refineries do you have?
We have two refineries.
Where's the other one?
The other one is in southwest Texas, a small community by the name of Carrizo Springs.
This concludes the joint hearing with Oil and Gas this afternoon with Representative Cowdery and members. We'd like to thank you, Senator, for your time. It is now 32 minutes after 3 o'clock. House members would meet me in my chambers right after this, and 10 minutes to 4 by my watch, we'll come back in and take care of business. We'll take a recess. Thank you, John. We just got done with a joint meeting between the Oil and Gas and House Finance. You have before you three royalty oil contracts, House Bill number 320, House Bill number 371, and Senate 269. What is the pleasure of the body?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Bettesworth.
I would move that contracts HB 320, HB 371, and SB 269 be amended with the amendment number one that is before us concerning legislative approval of major contract changes.
The amendment that you, the motion is made to pass is the one listed amendment number one under DNR suggestion. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Bettesworth.
I move the approval of HB
adopted.
Pardon?
With the amended.
House Bill 320 as amended. House Bill 371 as amended. Senate Bill 269 as amended with individual recommendations.
All these with zero fiscal notes?
Zero fiscal notes.
You have a motion before you to move out House Bill number 320. House Bill number 371, Senate Bill 269, as amended with zero fiscal notes. Is there any objections? Hearing none, so ordered.
the three bills are moved out of committee with the individual recommendation. Since there's nothing to come before House Finance, House Finance is adjourned.